Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week's guest is Alex Dunn, the president and CEO of CropLife America, who will discuss the EPA's herbicide strategy and Office of Pesticide Programs funding. But first, here's this week's headlines. McDonald's is suing Cargill, JBS, National Beef, and Tyson Foods, alleging the processors of conspiring to fix beef prices. The fast food chain accused the four meat processors of violating federal antitrust laws by coordinating on prices paid for fed cattle and on slaughter volumes. McDonald's said it had been occurring since 2015 through secret meetings and telephone calls. None of the meatpacking companies responded to our requests for comment. Grocery store prices were up slightly last month, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. Egg prices soared by more than 8% compared to the previous month. Meats, poultry, fish, fruits and vegetables, and dairy products also all increased in price. Food prices as a whole were up by nearly 0.5%. Hurricane Milton made landfall Wednesday evening in the Tampa and St. Petersburg, Florida area. The storm brought heavy winds and dumped up to 18 inches of rain on the area, considered a 1,000-year flood by meteorologists. National attention is shifting to Milton, while hundreds of billions of dollars in damages are still being assessed from Hurricane Helene's deathly path across the eastern U.S., which left agriculture operations and infrastructure in shambles. Nearly 100,000 farms were in Helene's direct path, according to 2022 USDA Census of Agriculture data, analyzed by the American Farm Bureau Federation. USDA said more than 200 staff are working to help respond to the disaster. EPA has somewhat scaled back a pilot project to reduce the use of insecticides in endangered species habitat, but continues to move ahead on its herbicide strategy. We asked Alex Dunn, the president and CEO of CropLife America, when the real-world implications of that strategy will begin to be felt by farmers.
We really believe that, you know, growers will be seeing in the 2025 growing season mitigations from the final herbicide strategy on new EPA registrations. So, you know, when we're talking about new products, they're going to have ESA requirements. And then for any products that are existing that are re-registered, they will be going through the ESA process and they will have new ESA requirements on their labels, and that'll start coming out in 2025. So we think in 2025, there might be four or five products that will have ESA requirements. So it's a really important point for growers to know that there's not a tsunami of ESA requirements coming their way. They're going to have time to get used to these requirements and to prepare for them. And we are doing a lot on the educational front to make sure that growers have a lot of tools in their toolbox to understand these requirements.
What concerns does CropLife have about the herbicide strategy and EPA's other efforts to comply with the Endangered Species Act?
So, you know, I don't think we have a lot of concerns. You know, we really commend the agency for listening to stakeholders, including CropLife and other grower groups, especially. The herbicide strategy that they initially proposed was fairly unworkable, but the final herbicide strategy, you know, most people are saying has a lot of wins. There are a lot of ways for growers and to get a lot of credit for on-farm practices and for erosion control and for all sorts of mitigations that they are doing. So we really feel like the final herbicide strategy has a lot of practical aspects to it. And Ag Extension is already starting to look at educating and teaching growers how to collect those points. You might hear that growers have to have points, and you can get a lot of points. And in fact, most growers can collect over 9, maybe even 15 points where just from their existing practices. So we think the final herbicide strategy has come a long way, and EPA really listened. The insecticide strategy, you know, it's just, you know, out and everyone's really looking at it, but it reflects quite a bit of what EPA learned from the herbicide strategy.
The Pesticide Registration Improvement Act imposes fees for registration activities and sets deadlines for EPA. How well do you think that's working right now?
PREA 5 has registrants paying 30% more fees. And unfortunately, products are being significantly delayed. this is not necessarily the direct fault of the Office of Pesticide Programs. I work there. The people are wonderful. They're working very, very hard. We don't want to throw shade at the Office of Pesticide Programs at all. We really support that office. We at CropLife, with our colleagues throughout the pesticide industry and our grower groups, sent over 300 letters seeking funding for this office, but they didn't get the funding that they need. And without that funding, without the people, they are really short. The problem is, being short funding and short people means that we are not seeing products come to market. The agency has not put a new active ingredient out in 18 months. And we have examples of products that are sitting at EPA in review that have been approved by, in some cases, 20 other countries and 14 other countries, but still haven't been approved by EPA, which means that American farmers don't have access to insecticides or fungicides that are available in other countries. And we want the American farmer to have as many tools in her toolbox as a farmer in another country.
We'll be back with more from Alex Dunn right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs is struggling with a limited budget. We asked CropLife President and CEO Alex Dunn how her organization has made it clear to members of Congress that OPP needs more resources.
Well, we're hearing that they understand, but it's a tight budget. We're also looking at some of the excess funds that might be available and asking for those to be redirected to the Office of Pesticide Programs. We've also recently elevated some of our concerns to the White House Domestic Policy Council to really talk about American competitiveness, about the agricultural market. We really need to maintain the competitiveness of American agriculture globally. And, you know, OPP is a very important piece of this. And if our OPP is not functioning, we could really risk the competitiveness long term of American agriculture.
The Chevron decision, which had given federal agencies a certain amount of leeway in writing regulations, was overturned earlier this year. Could that change the way EPA handles pesticide registrations?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, this new ruling may not immediately impact EPA's approach to those decisions, but we certainly have seen recent court decisions adding more scrutiny to agency decision making. And, you know, this may encourage EPA to spend more time developing its record. It may slow things down while EPA tries to dot every I and cross every T. That does concern us because we're already talking about a slow process. And when the agency's going into court without that Chevron favorability, where the court is going to look at the record with a favorable light towards the agency, that's gone. And so the agency is going to develop that record in a way that may take them longer.
Alex, before taking your position at CropLife, you worked at the EPA. From your perspective, how do you think the agency can expedite the approval of new products?
To be perfectly honest, you know, I think that it needs, we need to look at a structural change in OPP, how the organization of the office, how workflow happens. We know that there's going to be a shortfall of appropriations probably for a continued period, as well as a shortfall of personnel. So let's take those existing 500 people and the resources and think about doing the work a different way. We also, as registrants, want to be able to do more of the work on the upfront basis. submit it in a more organized way that the agency has less work to do on their end, and maybe consider third-party reviewers who could expedite some of the work on the agency's part. We're willing to help. We want to be part of the solution. We can't hire bodies at EPA, and I tried to do it when I was at the agency. It's very hard to bring personnel on board, and EPA can't print money. So let's look at the organization and workflow and figure out how to make this work faster.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us, Alex. We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke has a look at how much food and agriculture factor into each state's economic output in this week's Map It Out.
Agriculture remains an important factor when calculating each state's economic contribution. This map, featuring data from Terrain and the Feeding the Economy report, shows how much food and agriculture contributed to every state's total economic output in 2023. Iowa leads the way with 49%, Nebraska is second with 47%, and South Dakota is third with 44%. Six other states all have contributions of 30% or higher. The data also shows agriculture accounted for 20% of the country's total economic output in 2023, which comes out to about $9.6 trillion. Also, agriculture accounted for about 15% of jobs across the country. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss any of the insights and analytics that AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You won't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. One of the things farmers tell us is that they need certainty, but they aren't yet seeing that in biofuel policy. We asked our panelists, Ashley Smith from Tory Advisory Group and Paul Winters from the Clean Fuel Alliance, to talk about the challenges and opportunities ahead for the biofuel industry. The Clean Fuel Production Credit is set to go into effect in January 2025. We asked Paul what fuel producers can expect from the 45Z credit.
We're going from an excise tax credit on the blending of renewable fuels to an income tax credit for producers, and it's specifically for domestic producers. So there's been a number of rule changes requiring the fuel producers to register with Treasury. There are going to be major changes in how the credit is claimed and monetized. The excise tax credit could be monetized by filing a monthly estimated tax report with Treasury and then receiving a check back from the Treasury. In terms of the income tax credit, this is going to require producers to partner with other companies to purchase the credit from them and monetize it in that way. The rules around how to calculate the value are going to be tied to the carbon scores for the fuel and feedstock combinations that producers use. Treasury is supposed to issue a table of default values for some of these feedstock and fuel combinations. They are still working through how to conduct that life cycle analysis and determine those scores. There's been kind of a long delay in getting those rules from Treasury, and that's causing a great deal of uncertainty for our industry.
During your conversations with the administration, what has that dialogue been like? What timeline are you hearing for a possible decision?
There were two public statements last week, one by Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo and another by Acting Secretary for Tax Policy Aviva Arundine. They both indicated that the rules for the 45Z tax credit would not be finished by the end of the Biden administration in January, by the time we transition to the next presidential administration.
And Ashley, pulling you into the conversation here, what are the benefits that farmers can see from that 45Z credit?
When we're talking about this growing desire for decarbonization in the transportation space, farmers have a really unique role that they can play. Of course, anytime that farmers can diversify their markets, that's a really good thing. We know that when farmers rely on, you know, just one market or just one trading partner, that can create some really big challenges when unforeseen circumstances happen or prices change. We've seen that in the past few years. And so any chance to diversify markets, I think, is a welcome change for farmers. But what I think is really important to note is that when we're looking at this final guidance on 45Z, we want to make sure that there is a level playing field for farmers to be able to play in this space. We want to make sure that the good work, the climate smart practices and conservation efforts that farmers are doing on the ground, that value is getting passed down to them and they're seeing that return on investment. It's also important to note when we're talking about climate smart practices that we want to make sure in this final guidance that it's not just a couple of very specific climate smart practices that farmers have to use on their farm that are bundled together, and that's what makes them eligible for this tax credit. We want to make sure that those climate smart practices are expanded in the good work that farmers are doing on the ground, whatever it is on their farm, is being recognized and eligible in that tax credit. And then I think the final thing that farm groups have been talking about a lot, specifically in the soybean industry, is closing that carbon intensity score gap. Farmers, especially in the soybean world, have done some really, really good work in the past several years to make sure that indirect land use change score goes down. But right now, it's just prohibitively high. But farmers are growing more beans on less acres. And so it's important that indirect land use or ILUC score goes down so that we can close that gap between ag feedstocks and then a used cooking oil feedstock, for example.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. Farmers could see benefits from the Clean Fuels Credit when it goes into effect in 2025. We asked Ashley Smith with Tory Advisory Group how the lack of guidance is affecting farmers.
I think delay in any industry is a bad thing. It causes uncertainty. And I think you see that uncertainty right now, all the way from the biofuel producer level down to the farm level. What decisions should we make? How can we plan for the future? What is this industry actually going to look like? And a lot of that is based on how this final guidance is written. And so one of the things that's been pretty broadly called for is some safe harbor language from Treasury to make sure that there's some sort of financial stability for this industry while we await that final guidance on 45Z.
And Paul, the Treasury Department is under pressure from some lawmakers to limit eligibility for the new Clean Fuels Tax Credit to fuels made from feedstocks sourced in the U.S. But Secretary Vilsack has warned against this. How would domestic production restrictions change things?
Well, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act contained a number of provisions, a number of tax provisions that included additional credit for domestic production and domestic components of the final product. And, you know, there were some rules against foreign components or foreign production. So those were not specifically included in the 45Z tax credit. The Climate Smart Agriculture practices that Ashley spoke of are important for domestic production. They can increase the credit value for domestic producers.
And Ashley, rounding out our discussion, let's pivot to the damages from Hurricane Helene. We're seeing massive damages, up to $7 billion of crop liability in the area of the storm, according to USDA. Looking at the cleanup efforts, what are the benefits of having a strong farm safety net to support producers or waiting for Congress to approve an emergency disaster aid package?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, thanks for the question. Our thoughts and prayers and our heart just goes out to the people who have been impacted by those storms, both last week and this week. And I think when we're talking about disaster assistance, this is exactly the need for crop insurance. This underscores why crop insurance is so important to farmers and ranchers across the country. It's no surprise that there's over 400 million acres of cropland insured under crop insurance, because crop insurance was designed to be quick. It was designed to get payments into farmers' hands quickly when disaster strikes. When we're looking at some of the other disaster assistance packages that could be out there, historically, we've seen some of those payments take 1 or 2 years even to get to farmers, where crop insurance can get a farmer their payment in 30 days. And so when we're talking about getting farmers back on their feet so they can live to plant another season, that quick payment is really important.
Wonderful. Well, Paul and Ashley, thank you both so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke shows us how much of America's imports are ag products in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The agricultural trade deficit has become an issue in the 2024 election, with Republicans arguing the Biden administration hasn't done enough to open up new markets for U.S. exports, and the Biden administration recently touting successes in breaking down export barriers. According to USDA, ag imports are expected to reach $204 billion in fiscal year 2024, and a record high of $212 billion in fiscal year 2025. American ag exports are estimated to total $169.5 billion in fiscal year 2025, which is a drop of about $4 billion from FY24, reflecting in part the continued drop in prices for corn, soybeans, and other key commodities. That's pushing the projected trade deficit to $42.5 billion, up from a $30.5 billion deficit projected for FY24. This chart shows how the value of ag imports have been increasing, in part because of consumer demand for fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as sugar, cocoa, coffee, wine, and other products. The green line represents the total value of American ag imports in billions of dollars, while the blue lines represent the ag imports as a percentage of all American imports. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer, you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. USDA will release census data on specialty crops Thursday. The International Fresh Produce Association's Global Produce and Floral Show is Thursday through Saturday in Atlanta. And finally, Monday is Indigenous Peoples Day, a federal holiday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.